Hello, I'm Fred Stella, president of the Interfaith Dialogue Association. Welcome to another edition of Common Threads. When we think of all the serious hotspots of the world, it's easy to name the ones that have taken over the headlines: the various tensions in the Middle East, Central America, several countries in Africa. But one long-standing, very serious issue that most Americans would have a hard time explaining, much less understanding, is that which has been percolating in the Indian state of Jammu and Kashmir. Ever since the partition of India and Pakistan, this has been a source of frustration and human suffering. Several wars have been fought since the 1940s over this stunningly beautiful area. The reason we are focusing on Kashmir today is that, like several other geopolitical problems, this one involves religion in a major way. The majority Muslim theocracy of Pakistan claims that Kashmir never should have been joined to the Hindu-majority secular nation of India. Yet for most of its existence as a state in India, Muslims and Hindus got along rather swimmingly. What caused the crisis that overwhelmed the Kashmiri population in the late 80s into the 90s that led to what many refer to as an ethnic cleansing of the Pandits or Hindus of Kashmir? And why is there so much disagreement about the Indian government's decision to lift a rule that gave more autonomy to Kashmir than other Indian states? Quite honestly, the media reports I've seen over the past few months seem to be very one-sided. I've been in conversation with a number of Kashmiri Indian Americans about this, and among them, I met Siddharth Ambedkar. I was impressed by his holistic overview and measured response to the situation. Also, he gave me a book on the history of Kashmir written by his father, Days of Destiny, by Shanti Swarup Ambedkar, is something that I would recommend to anyone interested in making sense of all this. A little bit about our guest. Siddharth Ambedkar was born in Baramulla, a town in Kashmir that is about 30 miles away from the border with Pakistan. His early education was at St. Mary's Convent and St. Joseph's School. These were run by the Catholic priests from Britain, Italy, Poland, and Ireland. He earned his Bachelor of Engineering degree in Kashmir in the 80s, and then a Master of Engineering and a Master of Business degree at George Washington University. His parents, both teachers, taught in Kashmir until 1990, when they had to leave because of religiously driven violence and militancy. He currently works for a major defense contractor in the Washington, D.C. area, and is an advocate for the Kashmiri cause. We welcome to Common Threads Siddharth Ambedkar. Hello, Siddharth.
Hi, good morning, Fred. Good to hear your voice. I hope you're well.
I am doing very well, and thank you so much for being here. We have a lot of ground to cover in not a great amount of time, so I'm really hoping that, first of all, before anything, Siddharth, could you give us a really concise history of Kashmir and how we ended up where we are today with Kashmir and the tensions between Pakistan and India?
Well, I'll try my best. It's a complicated and quite a layered history of the place. Kashmir, first of all, was this princely state called Jammu and Kashmir. And over the years, over the millennia, it has had a Greek influence, a Buddhist influence, a Mughal influence, a Pathan influence. Six kings ruled over the place, and finally, the British and the Dogra rulers leading up to 1947, when the country India was partitioned into Muslim majority Pakistan and generally Hindu secular India with other elements of faith there as well. The problem with Kashmir, or the complexity with Kashmir, is it's a huge state. It's about 86,000 square miles. It's a huge state as it existed before partition. And its constituents were Muslims, there were Hindus, there were Christians, there were Buddhists, and spread over a large, large area. Kashmir means it's not a piece of wool or a cloth, as someone might refer to it, or a song by Led Zeppelin, but it's a physical entity. It's a huge landmass, as I said before, and it is somewhere between, if you can roughly approximate, north of India It touches current-day Pakistan. It touches China border, and it also has a small interface with the Russian border as it existed. So it's a long story. A majority of the people in the valley, which is the north of Kashmir, Kashmir has three main areas. Jammu and Kashmir, as it is formally called, we'll call it Kashmir for simplicity, has three areas. First of all is Kashmir Valley, very mountainous, very beautiful, picturesque as you described. It's like snow and streams and four seasons and beautiful weather, beautiful lakes, wonderful people generally. To the south is Jammu. And to the east and north is Ladakh. That's the third district of Kashmir. Ladakh is the largest district, about 23,000 miles, square miles. Jammu to the south is 10,000 square miles, and the valley, Kashmir Valley, to the north and east is 6,000 square miles. So this large portion has diversity in its geography, in its people, in their languages, and in their interrelations with each other. Jammu is majority Hindu. Kashmir Valley is predominantly Muslim, 96%, and Ladakh is predominantly Buddhist. Come 1947, there was a strange issue with partition, who would go where, and the British gave the ruler of each state or princely states of India the authority to accede to either to Pakistan or to India. That was their firm mandate, and no one could question it. It was the prince or the ruler of each state of India had to decide which way he wants to accede, and he had the ultimate authority. There was no one. He could not canvass or vote for a person or ask his constituent. He was the supreme leader of the state, and he was given the authority to accede either to India or to Pakistan. There was no scope for independence. No one wanted to stay independent, or no one had the authority by the British laws. So come 1947, it's early, as I understand my history, it's June, July of 47, and huge crises are happening. People are scared. There's violence. And most of the states that were in India, that we currently think of India, about 450 of them, readily accepted to being part of India. They said, sure, it's geographical continuity and we will be part of India. That's fine. Except for what is now currently what was West Pakistan, which is now Bangladesh.
No, I believe you mean East Pakistan.
East Pakistan, you're right, you're correct. East Pakistan, which is now called Bangladesh, exactly right. And areas in Lahore and the west of Lahore, where was a domination of Muslim states, they decided they would become part of Pakistan, and they came under the influence or the leadership of Mr. Jinnah. And to the east, it was Mr. Gandhi and Mr. Nehru. They decided to come under the Indian National Congress and form a loose confederation of Indian states to be called the Union of India. However, the problem in Kashmir particularly was a little complicated. Its majority population was Muslim, but its king was a Hindu Maharaja. He's called Hari Singh. His name was called Maharaja Hari Singh. Hari Singh was a strong supporter of the British. He was an independent state, and the British kind of considered him to be kind of a standoff, a separate area to be ruled by Hari Singh, as he thought. However, the treaty with the British was that the British would provide him all forces or all military to support him from external aggression. So he was kind of an independent fiefdom as he wanted to run his place, but he was also given the choice to decide. But he could not make up his mind what to do because he was in a dilemma. He wanted to remain an independent state because supposedly his soothsayers and his religious priests had told him that he can continue the Dogra dynasty for another 100 years, because he had ruled, or his forefathers had ruled Kashmir from 1846 onwards for nearly 100 years, and his forefathers had consolidated the state, basically starting only from Jammu, which is the south, had gone then to Tibet, to Ladakh, and to Kashmir, and made it into one integral state, which was called State of Jammu and Kashmir. So he thought he could continue, and in a feudal way, he decided that was his dynasty. However, there was a significant number of issues raising with governance, as we call it today, and the local people, especially in Kashmir Valley, who are predominantly Muslim, or in an area, small area that was called Punj, they resented his authoritarian rule, and they wanted to have a sort of a self-governance. So things went from for the south, as they say here, and a rebellion occurred, and he very strongly put down that rebellion. The rebellion was sponsored, now it seems, historical documents and historical facts are bearing out. It's a little confusing, but people from West Pakistan, which became Pakistan, which we know of Pakistan now, they invaded the territory of Punj and the territory of Jammu, and they basically coerced Hari Singh to act either one way or the other. Their pressure was that their Muslim people are getting hurt or killed, and they should come to their aid. So an army, loosely organized tribals, invaded from the west into Jammu and Kashmir. And this gentleman, the king, he had his army, which was roughly 60% Muslim, 40% Dogra Rajputs. Unfortunately for him, he did not have a good control over his army. His army rebelled. They basically failed. And the invaders from Pakistan, they're called the tribals, in a way were aided and abetted and armed by the Pakistan government in a kind of a very slightly shifty manner. They came up to Srinagar, which was the winter capital of the state of Jammu and Kashmir. And this is 1 month or 2 months post-independence of India and Pakistan. This is October of 1947. And the rest of India has acceded to India. The rest of the states have acceded to India. Pakistan has been formed. But here it is, Jammu and Kashmir. The king cannot make up his mind what to do, stay independent or accede to Pakistan or accede to India. His problem was his majority people were Muslims. He was a Hindu king, and he was not sure what to do. While he is dilly-dallying, these thousands and thousands of raiders come across, and they basically wholesale slaughter, and they kill anybody they can see, but their ire or their anger is targeted exactly against the Hindu minority in Kashmir. And to create a state that would accede to Pakistan. So this is around October 1947, and the state, the king still is confused what to do. But when he saw that one, his ministers or whoever was in charge basically told him that it's over for him unless he decides, he appealed to the government of India that he will need some military assistance to protect his territory. Mr. Mountbatten, or Louis Mountbatten, as we know, was the Governor General of India and Pakistan. Surprisingly, both the countries, they had been divided, or two new countries have been formed, and they decided to call him the Governor General of their states. He basically made it known to the king that unless he accedes to India, military aid would not be forthcoming. And this is sometime during 25th, 26th, 27th of October of 1947. And as he is seeing his army lose, the army kind of being devastated and people being killed, and the Muslim people from the northwest province of Pakistan, they're the Afridis and the Masoods, and they were ruthless, and they could not care less who they found as long as they could loot them, they could rape them, and they could kill them. and get all their monies and transport their property, their women, and their cattle back to their tribal areas in northwest Pakistan. And it's interesting here that we should note, or I will state, that there was a beautiful, wonderful small hospital and a convent in Baramulla, where I eventually studied 20 years later in the mid-60s, that was set up by these nuns from Ireland, from Poland, from Italy, and they used to treat the local Muslim population and give them medicines and introduce Western medicine ideas and hygiene and child care. And they were attacked by these hordes of tribal attackers who were all Muslim mujahids, Pathans, as they call them, and they just ended up in a horrible situation. And this is, Baramulla is 30 miles from Srinagar, which is the capital of the state, the summer capital of the state. And these ladies, what can one say? They were pawed and all those things, and they were shot and killed, and there was a Mr. Dykes who was shot and killed. There was a surgeon who was treating a lady who was just given birth, and she was, the lady was shot, so were his, the kids shot, and they just wanted to pillage and rape and loot. So while this is happening, the Maharaja Hari Singh, who is in Jammu, he flees, who is in Srinagar, he flees to Jammu. He still has authority over the state, but his army is basically of no use. They have basically lost against the tribals as they're streaming through. He accedes to, he signs what is called the Instrument of Accession to India. It's a legal document. It is the same document that the rest of the states that acceded to India from the Union of India later on signed, and he signed that he has acceded to India, and in certain conditions, it was not conditional, but that whatever the others signed, he also signed, and Mountbatten accepted that document formally a couple of days later, and then the Indian Army was airlifted to Srinagar. This was the 27th of October 1947. They were able to stem the flow of the hordes, the tribals, and 1 year of fighting ensued between the regular Pakistani army and the regular Indian army, eventually leading to a ceasefire in 1949, 1 January 1949, separating the two countries. Pakistan occupied a good one-third of Kashmir to the west, which is called Muzaffarabad. They call it Azad Kashmir. India retained two-thirds of Kashmir that starts near Uri, which is 30 miles south to the border, or 30 miles at the border, and Baramulla is 30 miles from the border, and the rest of Jammu and Kashmir stayed with India. And that is 1947, and the line of partition or the line of control was established there in 1947, and it has more or less stayed the same over the last 50, 60 years.
And if I could just break in for a moment to remind people that you're listening to Common Threads on WGVU. I'm Fred Stella, and with me today is Siddharth Ambedkar, and we are talking about the crisis in Kashmir. So actually, that was quite a wonderful sketch of what happened in those years. Let's fast forward. From what I understand in your father's book, things settled down, and relationships between Muslims and Hindus and Buddhists and Christians actually improved significantly. You yourself, am I correct, grew up in a wonderful interfaith atmosphere.
That is correct, Fred. It was a wonderful place, beautiful. People looked forward to a progressive modern society where education and a science-based outlook was the primary determinant of future success. We went to school in Baramulla and St. Joseph's College, or St. Joseph's High School and St. Mary's Convent. Sikhs, Muslims, Christians, what we call them Dogras, all were quite happy and looking forward to progress, looking forward to improvements in their economic condition. Like, you can't believe it was a small village town, but suddenly, because of the interests of foreign states or the benevolence of countries like Norway, we suddenly got tractors and electric generators and diesel power equipment to farm the apple orchards. And I used to put on backpacks with power generators, spray chemicals on the trees. And it was a great 20, 25 years, and people accepted that India was a progressive state, it was a secular state, and that their real interests lay in economic improvement and improvement of their condition. The Prime Minister of India, or the Chief Minister of India in those days, was a gentleman called Sheikh Muhammad Abdullah. He was a Muslim. He was a very popular person, and he was very close to Mr. Nehru, who was the Prime Minister of India. And he saw all the pluses and minuses, and consistently for several years agreed and seconded the instrument of accession to India. And he thought that now he can bring out the people from their medieval mindset and economic progress would happen. And he agreed into various agreements with the government of India that did to some extent preserve the local populations, the Kashmiri Muslims' identity, but at the same time moved them towards better economic situation. Huge land tracts were annulled that were owned by the Dogra king and his Jammu people. There were land reforms happened overnight, almost within a year. A landless peasant who would only till the land now got the entire land for free. And the owner of the land was given zero compensation, nil, not even water and cent. So suddenly there are millions of people who have been lifted out of poverty, and they are looking forward to better India, to a better place in India. They are getting educated, they are getting free scholarships, they are coming up in the administrative system. And things were great till mid-1980s. And then suddenly it all went south because the strange strain of this communal violence, a virus started getting into India, and that was because of this Wahhabi or some sort of an Islam that wants people, ladies, to stay barefoot and pregnant, as they say, and covered in their homes and not come out. And things became very bad in the mid-80s. And leading up to 1990, when unfortunately a lot of these people started emphasizing the fundamentals of Islam rather than a plurality which we all hoped for, which we all prayed for, which we all worked for. My mom and dad, since 1962, have lived in ramshackle huts just to teach kids in schools, in high schools, in colleges, in Baramulla, Sopor, Upi, Uri. And they taught thousands of kids, and everyone was looking forward to better things. But unfortunately, the motivation or the motivators of a very virulent form of Islam spread, and local state politicians also played fast and loose, and they wanted to preserve their power, and their power, unfortunately, they used was preserved through Article 370, and this was a pernicious article in the Indian Constitution. It was a temporary article. It's in the appendix, not in the main body of the Constitution, and it is labeled a temporary and transient provision, I believe Article Appendix 21 of the Indian Constitution, and it gave them special powers that essentially they abused to use all the millions of dollars of funds that would come into the state, and they would only give it to their few privileged people. The common Kashmiri Muslim peasant suffered. He did not get his full rights, but these guys controlled it, and they kind of played both sides. And unfortunately, in 1989, there was a huge electoral malpractices, and people, this militancy and this allure for Islamic fundamentalism, if you are different, you are no good, and you are kafir, and you have to be killed. And that happened, and about roughly 400 to 450,000 Kashmiri pandits that are Hindus, who are the aborigines of Kashmir state, were basically, within a couple of days, thrown out of Kashmir and forced to leave the valley because their women were raped, their houses were burned down, and their properties were basically taken over, and the temples were destroyed. And suddenly, who you thought was your friend, who you went to school with, who you played football, who you went into apple orchards to eat apples, turned around and said, no, you are different, and you better get the heck out of here. And that's what happened to my family, and to my sisters, and to others. And in 1989, it was winter, it was horribly cold, and out you are sitting in your home quietly, and you find loudspeakers blaring from the mosques that if you are not a Hindu, you will be killed, or your women will be this and that.
I think you mean if you're not a Muslim.
If you're not a Muslim,
right?
Or if you are a Hindu,
yes,
then you are a legitimate target. And those 3 months or 4 months were horrible. It was freezing cold, and out you have 10,000 people marching in the streets and pointing to you and telling you, "Get out of here! Get out of here! Get out of here!"
Siddharth, we are at the end of our program. This has gone so quickly, and there is so much more to talk about, but I'm hoping that you will be able to join us next week, and we can continue this conversation.
Okay, I'm here, and we will continue this conversation. Thank you for hosting me.
You're more than welcome.
My perspective.
Certainly. You've been listening to Common Threads. Siddharth Ambedkar, a Kashmiri-American activist, has been our guest. His father is the author of Days of Destiny, a memoir. His name is Shanti Swarup Ambedkar, and we'll talk more about the book next week. So please join us here on Common Threads next week.